information. And to be honest with you, if Tellez is hacked off about it, he or his agent would just leak it to somebody.
I mean, what's to say that this Ethan isn't getting it from his people?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, if you're saying that this is what he does
like
for a living,
has tracked
he dives
down these things.
Contracts.
Yes, he's tracked down these things before and been very much correct. So I'm on SpotTrack right now, and the one thing I don't see on SpotTrack is... Oh, no, okay. So they say that the contract notes, $800,000 are there in incentives.
But it doesn't break it down.
But it doesn't tell you.
Piece.
But Ethan's, what he cited... Just to go deeper into this, I actually do see more than 800,000 represented on his tweets.
I think one of them was World Series MVP.
So he's got $800,000 in plate appearance triggers, according to what this guy Ethan is reporting. He's got more like about $1.3 million in incentives. First place for the MVP is a cool $250,000 for Rowdy. I like this one. For some reason, just a gold...
Lead the league in steals,
$10 million. Gold glove is just a cool $25,000. Here's my take on this. Assuming that this is correct intel, and a lot of people now have started running it with. I saw Bob Smizek frustrated. Travis Sawchick retweeted James, and that's where I think it took hold with a lot of people.
With the inside baseball folks, with Sawchick, he's really big with the analytics.
I think Travis, let me put it this way about Travis. I don't think he would retweet it unless he had like...
Reason to think it was...
Yeah, more or
credible.
Less verified it. Yes. I'll just quickly say this, Pony. We always talk about how the Pirates might have to pay more for free agents because there's just not a winning history here. It can be a tough place to play for some people. Assuming this is true, I don't think it helps that very specific part of the equation for them.
Our last visit of the season with the voice of the Pirates, Greg Brown, brought to you by Allegiant Federal Credit Union. Shape your future. Visit AllegiantFCU.org. Greg, your reaction when you found out that the Pirates had DFA'd Rowdy Tellez?
I was surprised. I thought with a week left, both Michael A. Taylor and Rowdy Tellez. Yeah, I was surprised to learn that earlier this afternoon.
What's the baseball argument for it, if you had to make one, Greg?
Baseball argument would be you're moving on from him anyway, and that's why, quite frankly, I was surprised he was getting as much playing time this past month. You know, if it were up to me, I'd have done this
right at the beginning
of
September, right? I mean, that's what I just said. It would make more sense. It's September 24th.
I did not hear that. I'm sorry.
No, I've said it's September 24th. It would make sense to do it September 1st and just let somebody try to fill in there who's young.
Yeah. I mean, like your Billy Cook, see if you can play some first base. If you want to try somebody else out, whatever. So the timing of it surprised me. The fact that it was done, not necessarily, because he was just awful anyway at the last... You know, he had that good run. He got that OPS up and stuff. But, I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, the last month or so, he was just
He was
awful.
Very good in June, July, and August. We just looked him up, Brownie. I mean, he was an objectively good player, and then September, the bottom fell out again.
Greg, you're watching every game at this point. It's your job, closer than I am. Tell me if you think this is unfair, though. It just seemed to me in watching Tellez over the last 3 weeks like the effort wasn't there.
Well, I think he gives you that impression all the time, though. So when he's hitting, it's like anything. A guy hits, you know, he can trot to first base. It's not like he ever ran hard. He's not a guy that's going to present himself for being a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that's another reason why, as the team was going into that funk in August, it's just a bad look all the way around and even for the other players to see. So not a great example. And I don't think that changed, Andrew. I don't think he's ever going to be considered a hardworking guy. But when he hit, people accepted it.
You know him better than I do, having been around the team all year. If this report that he was 4 plate appearances shy of getting a $200,000 bonus is true, is Rowdy Tellez the type of athlete who you think will let people know how ticked off he is that he didn't get that bonus?
I don't know this, but probably. I don't know him well.
Yeah.
He's kind of a guy that likes to be kind of outspoken and out there. He didn't seem to be have great interest in Pittsburgh and the Pirates, and I think he felt put off when he made the terrible mistake of defending David Bednar, what, 2 weeks into this, or no, maybe it's longer than that. He was not performing well. He was in Pittsburgh for a couple, 3 weeks, and he's telling
fans how to behave.
Pittsburghers to how to behave was ridiculous. And so, yeah, I mean, that's just the kind of guy he is. So I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case. I don't know anything about what you guys are talking about. With I haven't researched this, but he's an outspoken guy. And, so whatever he does or says will not surprise
me. How closely do players, in your experience, if it ever comes up, like pay attention to the like these, I'll call them little incentives. $200,000 is not a little amount of money for the people listening to this show or for us doing this show, but like these little performance-based bonuses, do guys, in your experience, like, is that something that guys keep very close tabs on in clubhouses, Greg? Like players in general?
I don't know that other players, I mean, the player himself who has it in his contract, yes. And oftentimes managers do, to my knowledge over the years, if they're made aware of it, and depending on the closeness and the relationship that these guys have with the managers. But I don't know that it's shared at all, to my knowledge. I mean, maybe close friends would do that, but it's not common. It would not be common knowledge around the clubhouse if there were a clause that's about to be triggered.
Gotcha.
No.
Greg, Derek Shelton was on these airwaves earlier and was pressed by Joe Starkey on his future again. And Chris is laughing because I feel like he does that every week with him. And Shelton said, look, I'll circle back to what Ben said. He's confident I'll be back. I think I'll be back. Do you share that sentiment? If the GM was willing to, at a press conference, say, my intention is to bring Derek Shelton back, do you think that that means Shelton is back in 2025?
I don't know. I don't know if that. I don't know at all. I don't. You know, I was for Shelton. I was encouraged to hear that. I think when we chatted with Ben and he came out publicly and said that, I felt encouraged for Derek. But I don't know that it's factual that he comes back. I don't know the workings. I don't know how much conversation Bob and Travis and Ben and Derek have had. So I don't have an answer to that. I just don't.
How much difference can a manager in general make for a team like the Pirates right where they are right now, where it looks like the win total is going to be around the exact same, maybe if they finish hot a game or two ahead of, or not so hot a couple of games behind what they were last year? Just, I'm not saying like a new manager. I'm saying in general, what kind of difference can a manager make for a team like that?
I think in general, I over the years, heck, I've gone back and looked at old like newspaper clippings, because I've had this debate and discussion with people in the business, out of the business, fans and so on. Like, what difference does a manager, can a manager make in terms of wins and losses? Danny Murtaugh used to say it would be about 8 or 9 a year. And so I don't know if that's conservative or not, but I would guess a manager can make a difference for a handful of games. Now, did Shelton make a positive difference? Did they win 5 more because he was on board, you know, at times? And then I know, Chris, I don't know if you were on, but I know Andrew and I had this discussion weeks ago. I don't know if it was the both of you, but we did talk about Shelton and what I felt was a guy who, especially early on, did a pretty good job of knowing when to bring a reliever in, a certain reliever, how long to keep a starter in a ball game. And the one thing I am not aware of, I don't know how much analytics plays a part in his decision making. I do know that they have game planners. And this is not just with the Pirates. This is throughout the industry from a lot of teams, where they game plan before the game itself to determine when a reliever should come in. They've talked about it publicly that they like certain matchups. They want a reliever to come in to face a certain hitter. And so that's the issue I have. I just don't know how much leeway Shelton has when it comes to that. You know, does he have free rein to decide? I assume he would, I guess, overrule what the game plan was before a ball game. But I still think overall, if you look at the whole, and now it's what, 5 years with him, overall, I feel like he's got a pretty good feel when it comes to that aspect of the game. That's a big part of managing, is when to bring a reliever in, keep a starter in, take him out, that kind of thing. But you know, we'll know. I'm sure we'll know for certain in a, I would think, you know, in a week or so, as to what direction they're going to go for 2025 and beyond, I would think.
All right, Greg, I'll wait from you from Section 117 tonight.
All right. We look for you, Andrew.
See you, Greg.
Thanks. See you, guys.
Yep, Greg Brown.
Yes?
I do think Tellez will raise a stink about this. I do. And he did not. You know what happened, Mulsey? You were a pioneer on something. You ripped Tellez for the David Bednar thing, and the chickens came home to roost. Because I think at first it was, he's sticking up for a teammate. That's a sign of leadership. If Pittsburgh's needed that. Now listen to what Greg Brown's saying. The ridiculous comment that he made there.
I am amazed, separately from that, I am amazed at like some of the like Pirates Twitter, like the people who see themselves on Twitter as like big Pirates opinion makers, saying, I don't feel bad about Rowdy Tellez. Could anyone miss the point on this more? If you want the Pirates to be in the market for free agents, to whatever extent you think they can be in the market, you shouldn't want them to cut a corner like this for 200 grand. Quickly, Pony, very quickly. Look at what happened with when they brought Skeens up. They didn't bring him up early enough to get the potential pick bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's going to cost them a year because he's going to finish top two and all that other stuff. And now this piled on top of that.
Broderick, did he bounce back into a suitable fashion?
He did, but I'm not surprised by that. Broderick has a great deal of confidence in himself, particularly for a young guy. The performance was what it was in Denver. He didn't make excuses or seek comfort. He simply acknowledged it and went back to work. And I just think when you take that approach, you really tee yourself up for the appropriate bounce back, and he did.
Time for Tomlin Takes, brought to you by Gutter Helmet. Save 50% on installation to Gutter Helmet during their fall sale this month only. 888-5-HELMET is who you get in touch with today. We all were thrilled to see Broderick Jones have that big bounce back. Sounds like the coach is doing something that I'm a tiny bit surprised by. There's no like tough love there. You know, I think that we've seen Tomlin sometimes with young players especially maybe poo-poo a good game. Especially a guy who we might question the effort or like the motivation and try to like still maybe keep them angry, thinking they can channel that and make them a good player. Tomlin in his interpersonal dynamic where he gets lauded for the way he relates to players and gets votes all the time for being such a great players coach is thinking right now with Broderick Jones, maybe a pat on the back or a nice slap on the fanny is warranted. Let's give him some props. Let me say, I always believed in this guy. I always knew he was good. And he went out and he showed it against Bosa. And yes, it was only for a meager number of snaps, but it was because Broderick Jones injured Joey Bosa with his raw power and brawn.
Well, I think also they never used the elbow as an excuse and he didn't have the brace on. But could it also be Mike Tomlin tacitly under, like, he's not going to acknowledge this publicly, but by saying nice things about him, tacitly acknowledging they've kind of messed with the guy. They've cross-trained him at two positions. They've only played him at his off-tackle position.
And he is a left tackle. Just like Dan Moore can't play right tackle, maybe Broderick Jones is much worse at right tackle, but he doesn't. He's such a team guy, he's not going to say
that's real,
he sucks
though.
At one.
He just said, get me out there. What did they say? They call it, I haul it.
Yeah, I'll play
I think
any
Tomlin,
position.
See, I know everyone made a pretty big stink about like the way he reacted to after the Denver game. I still thought he was being pretty genial about everything, like pretty conciliatory. They call it, I haul it, I do what I'm told. Like, he also, I thought, was more saying Troy Fautanu deserved to just be the starter without a rotation. Weird feeling. I think Tomlin, other than the fact that he loves it when his guys just don't say anything to the media, I think he ultimately probably likes the guy's attitude. I think a lot of that was maybe on the outside looking in, but not something that actually existed on the inside.
Here is Tomlin on, believe it or not, what his defense didn't do well last week against the Chargers.
Great defenses communicate. Great defenses specialize in terms of a variety of personnel groups and schematics within those variety of personnel groups. And we just got to continue to work in those spaces. We've had some success, but we've also had some real JV moments, if you will. The longest run of the day was 13 yards. That happened when we had 10 guys on the field because of our inability to exchange people appropriately and handle some of those things that really tee up good defenses, as I mentioned.
So he's getting on them for one mishap where there were 10 guys out there. It's so hard when you have the number one defense. It's like Nick Saban or Kirby Smart at Georgia or Alabama would have to like invent chips on their shoulder and say things like no one believed in us when actually, in fact, everyone did. He is like trying to create reasons to get on his defense because that's what coaches do to get these guys to strive for a special amount of greatness. Oh, you think you're special? Well, how about that one play where you only had 10 guys on the field? I was surprised that he didn't mention in his critique of the defense, and I was surprised when there were 20 minutes of questions about it. No one asked, well, what happened on that touchdown play by Herbert? Was that you guys screwing up? Was that one of these communication mistakes that you're talking about?
I thought Romo telestrated something pretty reasonable. It's Porter's job to go back a couple of steps to give the safety time to go over there when the route is going that way, and then it's Porter's job after he gets a little depth to come up. It looked like Joey Porter just got caught peeking and never going
greedy.
Backwards. Yeah, he got caught
cookie
looking.
Jar.
We just watched that old Colts Steelers game where they've got Tomlin Donnie exhorting Ike Taylor on an overthrow by Kerry Collins or whatever. Don't go in there and look into the backfield and cheat. You've been in the league 9 years. I think that's what happened on that play.
Did you ever have your did you guys have a cookie jar? Back
like
in
an
the
actual
Mueller?
Jar in our house that said cookies on it?
That kept cookies?
Yeah, I mean every time my mom would make cookies, like any good baker, she knew that you put them in a container, but you got to put bread in there to keep them soft.
What? I mean, I'm not going to doubt that because you are the master baker.
Yes, thank you.
Not Bader, more into baking than Harrison Bader, but it's just
Bader. I get it.
Yeah. You're teaching me something. I did not know about the bread trick.
If you're not going to eat like the cookies in a very short period of time, i.e., like within a day or two, if they're going to sit on the countertop for 4 or 5 days, you stick a piece of bread in, preferably wheat bread, because it can absorb more moisture. It keeps, I swear to God, it keeps the cookies softer, and the bread will get like very stale. The cookies will stay soft. Anybody that's baked a lot knows what I'm talking about.
Donnie, did you have a cookie jar? A nice place to keep everything?
We did have one.
My parents did not have one. I do remember one of my aunts having one.
You guys sparked a memory, Pony asking that. It took a second. We had the most ass ugly yellow Tupperware. It was like a tall Tupperware container with like a ridged lid. Yellow Tupperware container in the bottom of the pantry where all the cookies were.
What happened to that? Women in their 30s, like our age now, and 40s, back when we were kids, they'd get together, they'd throw a Tupperware party. They'd start smoking cigs and drinking wine coolers, and they're trading Tupperware with each other. That was their idea of fun.
The Tupperware company just went bankrupt.
Get out of here.
Yeah, gone.
I don't know. Donnie, I'm sure your mom probably experienced a Tupperware party or two back in her heyday.
Oh, yeah.
So does anybody make money off of those? Because you know, like the Mary Kay or the Avon ladies, they're all just selling it to each other. It's just like money kind of exchanging hands in a circle, I feel
like. Big Tupperware finally going down.
I mean, I think that the storage solutions have really put the kibosh on Tupperware.
That music means it's time for the Donnie Football Debrief, a very serious segment about football that never, ever, ever turns into tomfoolery and hijinks. And it is brought to you by the Steel Mill Saloon in Mount Washington.
The Debrief, September 24, 2024. I actually do want to talk about something serious today, oddly enough. Not that I am a particularly huge fan of this guy as a person, but we found out today that Brett Favre diagnosed with Parkinson's. Where I want to go with this, though, do we think a player like Tua sees something like this happen to a guy who's still young? Brett Favre going to be 55 in like 2 weeks and have some I mean, we know Favre had several concussions. He said he only got, I think, officially diagnosed with like three or four. Also played in a more hard-hitting, different era of football. Do we think a player like Tua Tagovailoa looks at this and thinks about his future a little bit more?
I think players usually fall into one of two baskets. If you don't make it so that they all have sort of nuanced, complex feelings on it, like if you're going to ask me to say, just have to divide them up, I think there are either guys who just don't care. They're like, I am invincible right now. I'll worry about it later if it ever crops up, but I'm not even that worried about it because I can't afford to be. And then there are guys, there was a tight end on the Colts, I think, I forget his name, who's wearing the Guardian cap, very explicitly said, I want to remember my kids' names in 30 years. I want to be like, give myself the best chance to be healthy while doing this job. I think guys fall into one of those two baskets usually, probably somewhere in the middle of both. But I think that's kind of how it is. Tua, how could you not think that you're going to suffer like long-term potential ill effects from all this?
I also think that there's a mentality, like a warrior mentality in a lot of these guys where they think like they'll make that sacrifice for their families for millions of dollars.
Didn't Ryan Clark allude to something like that once? He said, I have no idea what life's going to be like for me after 50 years old or so, but like basically that's a risk I'm willing to have taken here. I don't want to put words in Ryan's mouth, but I remember or seem to remember him saying something to that effect.
I also think Chris is right, Donnie, that especially a guy older like Favre, who's not a peer of Tua's, that he would just be like, well, that's not going to be me. That happened to him. I think it would have to, someone closer to him would have to have some kind of traumatic effect from playing football, I believe, for him to have to rethink what's next for him.
I have some bad news for Tua if he's looking at Brett Favre and saying, that's not going to be me.
Well, here's the one other thing that I sometimes think about with this. Do guys playing nowadays feel like the game is such that it will protect them, that that's not going to happen to them because they've changed the way football
gets played? The rules
are? Yeah.
I think they might a little bit. The thing the thing about the whole Tua conversation that I can't help myself to think about is so many people, I'm painting with a broad brush, I get that, but a lot of people say he should retire. Are those the same people that think Sidney Crosby should have stopped playing hockey 12 years ago? Because what's the difference? Where is the difference? It's three diagnosed concussions in a short amount of time. The same exact thing happened to Sid. It's a damn good thing he didn't take everybody's advice, because we wouldn't have two more Stanley Cups here, and we wouldn't have been treated to one of the great hockey careers of all time. He would have turned into one of the biggest what-if stories in the history of sports.
I hate it when people use this term, and I don't think that's what it is, but it felt like when people said he should just retire, they were trying to be overly virtuous, maybe. I'm not going to say virtue
signaling.
How
is this any different?
But I'm saying the people who say he should retire are trying to say, like, I care deeply about the person here.
Who are saying that about Tua?
Yeah, and who said it about Sid. Like, they want to be seen as, look,
I
care deeply about the person.
They're analogous. I think the situations are very close and comparable.
Yes. And I'm just saying, I think that people have their heads in the right place. They don't want to see somebody who's ultimately participating in an entertainment product like permanently maimed because they're doing it, or like end up like Mongo McMichael. He's got ALS and all this other stuff, but you have to like let the doctors actually do the job, and then the person has to have some agency.
I don't even hold my breath when Sid gets hit anymore.
Well, I think hockey is a little different than football in terms of it's still a high contact sport, but I think Sid has pretty much avoided anything I would call a major headshot since then. Tua's taken... I mean, he'll get rammed into the boards, but it's just, to me,
it's not
quite the
same. How about the Capitals series when, like, Niskanen took his head off?
That was one where I held my breath briefly.
He came back, like, two games later and was fine, and we just got over it. He had a concussion. It was a mild concussion, or however they phrased it. Then he came back and played, and they won.
I think the other part of it that's nerve-wracking is, with concussions, you just don't know how it's going to affect a guy, you know, day-to-day even. They don't know. It's mystery area.
Favre is one of the most entertaining quarterbacks and fun quarterbacks of all time. I will say, in the games he played against the Steelers, I never remember him. They didn't play a lot because he was in the NFC, but I just never remember Favre having a game against them where I was like, oh my God, they just lost because Favre did his gunslinger, backyard football against them kind of deal.
Well, I mean, they went there in 05, the year they won Super Bowl 40. They had Charlie Batch at quarterback and just kicked their ass.
Yep. And Favre did diddly poo in that
game. Wasn't
there
a long fumble return by Polamalu in that game?
And I think a great block by McFadden. I'll say great. He got ran over, but he got in the guy's way.
The game he played with Minnesota the year after they won the Super Bowl here is remembered
multiple
for
big turnovers.
Well, that Adrian Peterson.
Oh, just destroying Willie Gay.
Yeah, like
poor Willie Gay.
That's what people.
Oh, he got trucked.
That's what people remember him just taking the souls of Steelers defensive backs.
Five games for Favre against the Steelers. He had four touchdowns, three picks, 86 passer rating. He was pedestrian against them.
Yeah.
My main memory is I want to say it was in a preseason game back in the Greg Lloyd era, or maybe it could have been regular season. I want to say the outcome was like 17-3 Packers. And Lloyd just came in and demolished him on like an unimpeded pass rush. I think he like pushed him, Pony. He didn't try to tackle him. He just basically pushed him as hard as he could and knocked Favre like what looked like 10 yards back. I think he got unnecessary roughness. That's the first time I can remember understanding that a player was mad because he hit a guy too hard. And I want to say it was a preseason game because back in the day, those guys actually played in the preseason against each other.
I know they played in 95 against the Packers.
I'm looking it up right now.
I think they lost the year that they went to the Super Bowl.
17-3, that's the game. 92 is the one I'm thinking of. Greg Lloyd got hit with like an unnecessary roughness for just destroying Favre on a blitz. Favre stayed in the game.
Did they play on Monday Night Football late in 95, or was that a regular?
All of his games, let's see, 95 you're saying?
Yes.
They played Christmas Eve. That was 1 o'clock. That was a 1 o'clock start. In fact, that was the game. Was that the game Thigpen dropped like a pass on the very last play of the game that would have won it, and he was wide open?
Yep.
And the ball was right on his hands, and he just dropped it straight away. God, Neil O'Donnell going back there, throwing it 55 times in that game. What the hell were they doing?
Same game plan for the AFC Championship game against San Diego in 94.
I know. Oh, you know what? I remember the other one. One of the games at the Steelers. Courtney Hawkins had a huge game in 98, and the Steelers beat them 27-20.
Yeah.
He had some pedestrian outings, though, against them.
Do you think he threw the ball harder than any quarterback ever?
I think Josh Allen might throw it harder than him. I don't know. I don't think
I'll tell you what,
that.
The guy they're going to play on Sunday's got an absolute missile attached to his right shoulder. He don't know where it's going a lot of the time. But that thing, you know, like the video, like the old black and white of the guy with the goggles on who's getting hit in the chest with the cannonball?
Yes. Yes, a classic.
That is the velocity in which Anthony Richardson throws a football. It is not thrown, it is launched by him.
I mean, the throw in week one for the touchdown when he had slipped and barely reset himself on his back foot and he dropped a dime in the bucket like, 60 yards down the field was stupid.
Here's the comparison I'll make. Justin Fields is Jared Jones. Nice arm. Can get it up there. Richardson Skeens. He can hit 103. Now, he doesn't have the control of Skeens, but he's got the...
He makes me nervous.
He's got
though.
The wow effect.
He makes me nervous enough. I don't think he's inaccurate right now, but I don't think it's because of like he'll never be accurate. I think it's a lack of reps. He makes me nervous, man. Already on Tuesday because he's just capable of anything. What does Tomlin like to say about T.J. Watt? He's visiting from another planet. Talent-wise, physical gifts-wise, Anthony Richardson's visiting from another galaxy.